Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas and Go at the Y, and Gas and Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. Broadcasting on 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station from here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 34 degrees outside with a few clouds. Out at the airport, they are showing westerly winds at 3 miles per hour, 76% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, votes are still being tallied, and they will be for a couple of weeks. But Republican congressional candidates Sarah Palin and Kelly Schubaka are likely to lose their races. We'll hear what they have to say about that. Also, it's starting to become more clear which elections were being won on a statewide basis and how our legislature might look in the end. And they're starting to get together about who might form majority caucuses.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The University of Virginia community is reeling from a mass shooting on its Charlottesville campus last night. Three members of the football team were killed, two others were injured, one critically. The alleged gunman, a former UVA football player, has been arrested and faces several charges. Whitney Evans of member station VPM has the latest.
Christopher Darnell Jones Jr. has been charged with three counts of second-degree murder and three counts of using a handgun in the commission of a felony. Police say the former UVA football player opened fire inside a charter bus carrying students returning from a field trip. Police found the bodies of Devin Handler and Deshaun Perry inside the bus at a parking garage on the school's campus. Lavelle Davis Jr. was taken to the hospital where he died. University of Virginia police say school officials had investigated Jones previously for a gun-related incident. The university has canceled all classes and university events. For NPR News, I'm Whitney Evans.
President Biden's pledging there will be no new Cold War with China. Today on the sidelines of the G20 summit in Bali, the leaders of two world powers met face-to-face for the first time since Biden's election. They spoke for 3 hours about a range of issues. Biden says he does not believe China intends to invade Taiwan, a self-governing island claimed by China but closely allied with the U.S. NPR's Emily Fang says the leaders also addressed the North Korean nuclear threat.
They talked about North Korean missile tests because the U.S. pushed China to rein in its ally, basically, to control the number of missile tests Pyongyang has been launching. They talked about the war in Ukraine, and that's why they actually made some headway. Both leaders, Xi Jinping and President Biden, agreed that nuclear weapons should be off the table and that actors like Russia, for example, should not be making nuclear threats when it comes to the war in Ukraine.
NPR's Emily Fang reporting. President Biden told reporters in Bali that Democrats won't have enough votes in Congress to codify Roe versus Wade, the 1973 ruling that legalized abortion in the U.S. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports Biden is in Indonesia for the G20 summit and spoke at a media conference following his meeting with China's Xi Jinping.
The president said he likely would not be able to fulfill his goal of codifying abortion rights through Congress. Democrats have maintained their slim majority in the Senate, but the House is likely to flip to Republicans.
I don't think there's enough votes to codify unless something happens unusual in the House. I think we're going to get very close in the House, but I think it's going to be very close, but I don't think we're going to make it.
Biden also said world leaders he spoke to in Egypt, Cambodia, and Indonesia have been very focused on U.S. election results, and he emphasized election deniers had been defeated in their races. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Republican congressional candidates Sarah Palin and Kelly Schubaka are likely to lose their races once the Division of Elections tabulates the ranked choices of Alaska voters 12 days from now on November 23rd. But they aren't conceding. Both candidates are making vague accusations of malfeasance and speaking of unspecified election fights ahead. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
With just first-choice votes counted, Palin is 20 percentage points behind Democrat Mary Peltola. So far, it appears to be a replay of the August special election, which Peltola won. Only this time, Peltola's initial lead is even greater. Palin could still win if she got enough second-choice ballots, but it's unlikely. In social media posts after the election, Palin cast blame on fellow Republicans for splitting the vote and on Alaska's ranked choice voting system, which she called un-American, though courts have deemed it legal. Palin also made herself out to be a winner and said she'd continue to fight.
In anticipation of an announcement of victory, being able to, and it's a privilege to, announce and appoint Jerry Ward as chief of staff. And
the final election results won't be known until second choices are tabulated, which the Division of Elections announced months ago will occur on November 23, the day before Thanksgiving. Palin, though, tried to cast doubt on the validity of the election and suggested the delay was some kind of glitch.
In fact, Division of Elections alludes to the idea of maybe not having results in the Alaska congressional race until Thanksgiving.
Jason Gren, executive director of Alaskans for Better Elections, says there's no evidence of fraud or corruption of the vote. He says Palin has no cause to undermine faith in Alaska's election.
I think Alaskans should be proud of the division elections and proud of the lieutenant governor's office for handling this so well, and also should feel confident in the security of our system.
Kelly Schubaka isn't conceding either. She's ahead of incumbent Lisa Murkowski in the U.S. Senate race, but her lead has shrunk to just over one percentage point, about 3,000 votes. Murkowski is expected to overtake her on second-choice votes once Democrat Pat Chesbro is eliminated and her 20,000 ballots are reallocated. The day after the election, Schubaka went on a right-wing podcast asking for contributions to help her in possible legal battles ahead.
So we're anticipating a whole bunch of shenanigans here in these next couple months between now and January to try and hold on to the Murkowski monarchy. And that's why I really need your help. Our race is not over, and I'm not going to give up this fight.
Schubaka spoke on Bannon's War Room, hosted by Steve Bannon, a former presidential advisor to Donald Trump. She did not say how she intended to fight or whether she intended to initiate a fight or play defense. She's previously said she would accept the election outcome as long as she believed nothing went, quote, super wrong. Schubaka's campaign did not respond to a request to clarify her remarks, neither did Palin's. Both candidates were supported by former President Trump, who caused national turmoil by refusing to accept that he lost the 2020 election, though he's provided no evidence of fraud that has held up in court. Palin has said she believes the unsupported claim of a stolen election. Schubaka, an attorney, did not go as far, but has questioned its legitimacy. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
With nearly every seat in the Alaska legislature up for election this year, one big question has been whether Republicans will form a majority in either the state Senate or House, or whether either chamber will be controlled by a coalition of Democrats, moderate Republicans, and independents. Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks says some state senators have been talking about the very real possibility of forming a coalition. But as Brooks told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove, the future of the coalition-controlled House is much murkier.
It's too early to say in the House, but right now, Republicans have leads in 21 of the 40 seats, a bare minimum majority needed, but it's not guaranteed. The last few election cycles, we've seen Republicans win a majority of seats in the House but be unable to form a majority caucus because of divides between Republicans.
Right. And what are some of those key races for Senate seats that either surprised you or just that factor in heavily here?
Right now, we're seeing Democratic Senator Scott Kawasaki leading in Fairbanks. That was a close race and still is a close race, but he seems to have a comfortable lead at this point. The closest race in the Senate right now is Democratic Representative Matt Clayman, who challenged incumbent Republican Senator Mia Costello. He's got a very small lead, but right now it looks like absentee and early votes that haven't yet been counted are more Democratic than the election day ballots. So it seems like Clayman is going to expand his lead rather than see it shrink. We'll keep a close eye on that. In Eagle River, we've got Republican Kelly Merrick winning that race by a fairly large margin. The result isn't expected to change there. If you'll recall, Merrick, as a representative, was one of two Republicans who joined the coalition in the House last term. So she's considered a possibility for a coalition in the Senate as well. Remains to be seen there, though.
And then same question for the House. What were key races that you were watching there and how did they turn out?
You know, a lot of the races in the House that I had an eye on, I'm still waiting to see what's going to happen. There's a couple in East Anchorage that I'm not comfortable on calling. The one covering Joint Base Elmendorf, Richardson, and Government Hill, we're going to need to wait till the 23rd until ranked choice voting kicks in and we see how those sort out. Up in Fairbanks, where Maxine Dibert, the Democrat, was challenging Republican incumbent Bart Laban, it looks like Dibert has enough to win and flip that seat to the Democrats. On the other side of Fairbanks, Democratic incumbent Grier Hopkins looks like he'll lose. He was placed in a heavily Republican district by redistricting. So that's effectively a draw if you're considering control of the House, both of those two races.
So, James, getting back to this idea of whether or not a coalition would form in either chamber of the legislature, I've always wondered, what are they actually talking about? I mean, are they talking about specific issues, the PFD, the budget, or is it just sort of general philosophy or what?
Yeah, I was talking to Senator Jesse Keel, the Democrat from Juneau, and he said that whenever you're talking about an agreement in the legislature, whether it means a coalition agreement or just a piece of legislation, you need three things, three P's. And he said it's alignment on policies, politics, and personalities. You need all three to align in order to get an agreement. So as senators and representatives talk to each other, they're going to be saying, well, can I get along with this guy or these ladies who are in a group with me? Do we have the same ideas, the same priorities on, say, the budget, on the dividend? Can we vote together on this? Do we have a good idea of who the Senate president or the Speaker of the House and the finance chairs, the leadership positions, who are going to take those? Is there agreement on that? How do you handle a situation where, say, there's a controversial bill that splits the majority? Are people going to be allowed to vote how they want, or are they going to need to follow a single majority caucus line? Those are the kinds of things that get hammered out.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. The PPP program that Jesse Keel mentioned.
Yeah, and there, as one senator told me, there's a lot of calls going on right now. Lots of text messages, lots of calls, people just coordinating and saying, well, how do you feel about X? And do you like person Y? One thing that surprised me that I heard while talking to senators was that there's the suggestion that the reelection of Governor Mike Dunleavy might encourage the creation of the coalition there in the Senate. The idea being that some of the moderate Republicans have different views on the budget than Dunleavy, and they're concerned about a repeat of Dunleavy's 2019 budget plan, where he proposed really drastic cuts to state services in order to pay for a larger permanent fund dividend. And while Dunleavy eventually backed away from most of those cuts, there's a lot of long memories in the Senate.
That was Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks speaking with Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove. At a work session on Tuesday, Kodiak City Council members agreed to continue conversations with a company that wants to recycle used fishing gear from a 5,000-square-foot parcel along the shoreline of Gibson Cove. But they stopped short of voicing long-term support for the idea, saying there needs to be more public discussion about the area's long-term use. Net Your Problem is a Seattle-based company with recycling locations in coastal communities across the United States, including 5 recycling centers in Alaska. The company applied for a 1-year lease with the city of Kodiak in August to set up the shop in Gibson Cove, which is located past Pier 2 on the way out of town. Council members said they support the mission of Net Your Problem, which recycles end-of-life gill nets, seines, lines, and trawl nets. But the city is still in the process of gauging public support in the area through its waterfront master plan. Several members of the council noted that long-term ideas for Gibson Cove include developing its recreational amenities for public use. Council members said Net Your Problem could be a good short-term fit for the area and directed City Manager Mike Fenge to follow up with the company for more specifics on its plans for the site. Wildlife officials in Kodiak say this was a busy summer for bears within city limits. Nate Svoboda is an area management biologist with Alaska's Department of Fish and Game. He doesn't have exact numbers, but he says less food sources pushed more bears than usual into town.
Low salmon runs, particularly on the road system. The berry crop was not too bad early in the year, but it seems like it was fleeting very early, so the berries didn't stick around.
Bears were spotted in Kodiak's dense Spruce Cape neighborhoods, near the high school, and even swimming across the channel to Near Island, which is a popular walking area. Kodiak Police Department spokesperson Francis De La Fuente says 2 sows with cubs in particular made this summer a busy one for officers. He says those bears created a dangerous situation before they were pushed out of the area and relocated. Both Svoboda and De La Fuente say it's important to remind people that not all bears hibernate in Kodiak for the winter. And as the weather gets colder, residents should remain vigilant, particularly around dumpsters at night, and properly dispose of their trash. A Kodiak man arrested in September on drug and weapons charges faces a second indictment involving large-scale narcotics trafficking in Anchorage. Law enforcement in Kodiak arrested 54-year-old Mark Nason for his alleged connection to fentanyl, meth, and heroin seized on the island with a street value of $656,000. Multiple handguns were also confiscated during his arrest. A Department of Law press release on Thursday says a subsequent search of 2 storage units belonging to Nason in Anchorage in September turned up an additional 11,000 fentanyl pills. The search also found more than 10 pounds of meth, 5 ounces of heroin, 1 pound of marijuana, and 5 firearms, according to the press release. Nason pleaded not guilty to 13 drug and weapons charges in Kodiak Superior Court in late September. His initial court appearance on 11 additional charges from the Anchorage drug bust was scheduled for Thursday. Nason remained jailed as of Thursday in Anchorage. A Palmer pilot died on Thursday when investigators say his small plane struck a cable and crashed into the Matanuska River near Chickaloon. Alaska State troopers have identified the pilot as 46-year-old Joshua Seagrave. Troopers were told that about 1 p.m. on Thursday that Seagrave's plane had crashed near mile 77 of the Glen Highway. Clint Johnson, the National Transportation Safety Board's Alaska chief, says the cable appeared to be from a cross-river tram. The pilot of another plane flying with Seagrave on a personal sightseeing trip from Palmer's Wolf Lake Airport saw Seagrave's Piper Super Cub crash.
The witness pilot indicated that the accident pilot ended up descending down onto over the top of the Matanuska River. A couple hundred feet is how it was explained, and unfortunately collided with the cable that was strung across the river.
Johnson says the NTSB is considering other factors in the crash, but that weather conditions weren't immediately an issue.
With witnesses that were in the area, weather doesn't appear to be a factor in this case, but we always look at everything.
Their report should be released in about a week.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Insight Daily Radio. Iconic character actor Tom Wopat reprises his role as Sheriff Alden Rockwell in the long-awaited sequel to the action movie County Line, with County Line all in. When a not-so-popular lawyer is killed literally on the county line, Maxville County Sheriff Alden Rockwell must reluctantly work with the newly elected sheriff, Joe Porter, of the neighboring York County. Her big city methods clash with his old-school ways, but when the murderer continues to strike, they must learn to set aside their differences and work together in order to stop the killer. We spoke with Tom about this exciting new film.
He's been doing it a long time, and I mean, he knows most of these characters. I think he's proud of his record in this county, and the tactics that he's used, he's comfortable with. He's comfortable with the people we're dealing with. He knows everybody. He knows what's going on, and he doesn't need new technology to teach him how to do what he does. He also resents her kind of insistence on protocol and the new technology. I'm definitely protective of her, but in a defensive sort of way.
That's Tom Wopat on his role as Sheriff Alden Rockwell in County Line All In. County Line All In premieres on INSP Saturday, November 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern. To find out where to watch in your area, go to countylineallin.com. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 14th day of November, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 8:53. It will set again at 4:54. That will give us 8 minutes and 8 hours and 1 minute of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 10 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 54 degrees set in 2013, and our record low was 9 set in 1975. Currently 37 degrees, it's slowly inching its way toward the predicted high of 41. We're looking for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day, southeast winds to 5, becoming completely calm. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 34, light north winds increasing to 15 this evening. And for tomorrow, rain is likely, mainly after 4 in the afternoon. Partly sunny skies until then, with highs near 42, north wind to 20, gusting to 25. Rain on Tuesday night as well, a 90% chance of it. Northeast winds to 20 Tuesday night with gusts as high as 25. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 4:48 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 7.9-foot tide, followed by a low tide at just about midnight, 11:57, of 1.3 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:13 this afternoon and be 11.7 feet in Larson Bay. That'll be followed by a low tide at 12:16 a.m. of 2 feet. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Gale warning for tonight and tomorrow. For tonight, south of Dangerous Cape, northeast 25, increasing to 35 after midnight. North of Dangerous Cape, northeast 15, increasing to 25 after midnight. Seas to 11 feet on our east side tonight. For tomorrow, northeast 40, except northeast 30, north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 13 feet. For Tuesday night, northeast 35, seas to 12 feet. Over in the Chillicothe Strait, gale warning for tomorrow. For today, southwest 15, becoming variable 10, seas 4 feet, subsiding. For tonight, northeast 15, increasing to 30 knots after midnight, seas building to 8 feet after midnight in the Chillicothe. For tomorrow, northeast 40, seas to 12 feet, coming up to 15 feet tomorrow night. The Alaska Aerospace Corporation will be conducting rocket launch operations at Narrow Cape between today through November 21st. Road closures could be in place between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. To ensure public safety during the operations, there will be restrictions at milepost 10 of the Psagshack Road until hazardous operations have concluded for the day. Refer to the Pacific Spaceport Complex Alaska hotline, and that number is 833-772-2321 for updates. That's 833-PSCA-321. Oh, sure, that's easier. The Alaska Commission on Aging will be holding a listening session for Kodiak seniors, that's technically people 60 and older, and the public to find out what's working with senior services in Alaska and what is not, and then evaluating those responses into the state's plan. The listening session is taking place tomorrow. It's happening at 10 a.m. at the Kodiak Senior Center's multipurpose room. The state plan for senior services happens every 3 years using public input, and especially input for people 60 and older. The plan is important for state planning for seniors, outlines demographic trends, comes up with a vision, guiding principles, goals and objectives and strategies, also performance measures for improving and accessing senior services statewide. An important part of the state plan is the funding formula for different state grants are based on decided weight factors that could be affected by your input. Listening sessions have already been held at different places around the state. This is an opportunity for Kodiak residents to voice their priorities to be included in your state plan. It's free to attend and open to the public. For more information, call the Senior Center at 907-486-6181. But again, that's tomorrow, 10 a.m., at the Senior Center's multipurpose room. Entertainment coming up this weekend is storytelling. On Friday, the Galley Tables is presenting Scuttlebutt. It's a storytelling event for youth. Show your support and have a great time listening to their young storytellers spin a yarn and entertain the crowd. That's happening Friday at 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium's Drama Pod. There's no charge for admission, so it's free entertainment. Show up 7 p.m. at the Drama Pod. And the very next day, Galley Tables will be having an event. In fact, Galley Tables is looking for a few storytellers for their season opening event on November 19th, next Saturday. The theme is home again, and storytellers have 7 minutes to tell their story. If you have a story you'd like to tell, email them at galleytables@gmail.com or sign up at galleytables.com. Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary is having its general meeting on Saturday, November 19th at 10 a.m. in the Barometer Room at Providence Kodiak Island Hospital. Everyone is welcome to attend. The short business meeting will be followed by the decorating of the angel trees. Please plan to attend and help decorate the angel trees throughout the hospital, and it's a good time to support their raffle. Raffle tickets will be available for members to pick up. This is the last general Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary meeting until January. Here's a note for elementary school families. Mark your calendar on November 22nd. It will be an early release day for all Kodiak Island Borough School District elementary schools. Grades kindergarten through 5 will be dismissed at 1:50 p.m. due to scheduled family teacher conferences. Call your school office if you have any questions, but again, that's on November 22nd, early release, 1:50 p.m. Coming up Saturday, December 3rd, it's the Chiniac Christmas Market. That's happening at the Chiniac Library from noon to 4 p.m. on Saturday, December 3rd. To get there, take a ride on King Crab Way at mile 41 and a quarter. The road curves to the right, and the library is located on the left-hand side of the road. They're going to feature arts, crafts, pottery, salves, preserves, baked goods, and more, all homemade in Kodiak.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.